Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this extra episode, many words come to mind at the mention of Dr. Temple Grandin. Creative, intelligent, daring, persistent, curious, no-nonsense, dedicated, inspirational. If you have heard her speak or seen the movie about her life, you know she is unique. If you haven't heard about her, this talk will be a gift. She is a force. Grandin was diagnosed as brain damaged at age 2. Her mother, Anna, steadfastly pursued ways to understand her daughter's condition and ultimately educate her. Anna came to suspect her daughter was on the autism spectrum at a time when the prescribed treatment was commitment to an institution. She fought that, too. Fast forward to the present day, Grandin is a professor of animal science at Colorado State University, a well-known inventor of humane systems for the treatment of livestock, and an internationally famous spokesperson on autism. It is an understatement to say that the person considered brain damaged at age 2 is brilliant. Temple Grandin gave this talk, Different Kinds of Minds, on March 8th, as part of the University of Washington Graduate School lecture series, Equity and Difference, Rights. Here, UW's Director of Public Lectures, Yvette Moy, introduces the program.
Good evening, and happy International Women's Day to you all. Great. Great. It's a day that's dedicated to celebrating powerful women all around the world. And what a wonderful person to spend the night with in Temple Grandin, right? I'm Yvette Moy, and I'm the Director of Public Lectures here at the University of Washington, and our office is housed in the Graduate School. Our speaker tonight will be introduced by Eileen Schwartz, the Director of the Herring Center for Research and Training in Inclusive Education. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Yvette. As Yvette stated, it's my honor to be the director of the Herring Center for Research and Training in Inclusive Education, and I'm also a faculty member in the College of Education. Two amazing jobs at the University of Washington. The Herring Center is committed to building a world where children of all abilities and backgrounds learn, play, and grow together. Through interconnected programs of research, demonstration, and dissemination, Herring Center faculty and staff and our amazing graduate students work to ensure that every child with a disability has access to a world-class education. I'm so honored to welcome tonight's lecturer, Dr. Temple Grandin. Dr. Grandin didn't speak until she was over 3 years old, and she's made up for it since then by teaching us all so many things. She credits her mother and caregivers when she was a young child and for providing her important treatments like speech therapy to help her find her voice. Her teachers also taught her how to wait and take turns when playing board games, and she entered kindergarten alongside her typically developing peers. Today, Dr. Grandin is a prominent author and speaker on both autism and animal behavior. As a professor of animal science at Colorado State University, she also consults on both livestock handling equipment design and animal welfare. Half the cattle in the United States are handled in facilities that she has designed. Dr. Grandin has been featured on NPR, the BBC, Larry King Live, 2020, 60 Minutes, Fox and Friends, and in Dr. Oliver Sacks' amazing best-selling book, Anthropologist on Mars. In 2010, HBO made an Emmy Award-winning movie about her life, and she was inducted into the American Academy of Arts and Sciences in 2016. Dr. Grandin is always interesting, informative, and inspirational. I am looking forward to learning from her tonight when she speaks to us here at the University of Washington. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Grandin.
Get the mic on here. I hope everything's working really well. Lots of things to talk about tonight. And I want to talk about getting out and doing real things. I got a chance to go visit NASA. Man, I went to all the NASA places. That was cool. And this is a SpaceX launch taking off. And this emphasizes the importance of getting kids out doing real things. Going to real launch is not the same as watching it on television. You know what else I learned when I went to Cape Kennedy? The right stuff rode the rocket. But the geeks, the nerds, the misfits, and some of the special ed kids, they built the stuff. I bet you there's lots of special ed kids over at Boeing building airplanes. I fly on all the time. And I'm saying that really seriously. I go back and forth between the silos. I go into the tech world. There's all kinds of kids there, undiagnosed autism. They're like Sheldon Cooper. It says, oh, no, I don't have Asperger's. I said, yes, you do, Sheldon. You definitely do. See, a little bit of autism makes you more thinking. A brain can be more thinking or a brain can be more social-emotional. When does it become an abnormality? There's no black and white dividing line. All right, let's get on some more geek stuff here. There's the SpaceX launch pad where the Falcon Heavy took off. I thought that was so cool, putting the car into outer space, because that was a test flight. So what do? Put boring concrete blocks in it or something like that? Or something fun like a car with he's got good reading too. Isaac Asimov's Foundation books for reading. There's the launch there, got a front row seat. Really, really super cool. And then I went out to Pixar. I like to go to these fun places. This is where the visual thinkers live. They don't have offices. They buy tool sheds and then they decorate them and make them really cool. But one of the things I learned when I went to Pixar is that you have to touch to perceive. They said I've got to get them off the computers and have them draw stuff. And I noticed when my industry, the meat industry, switched from hand drafting on designing things to computers. And right during that switch, this is in the mid-90s to late 90s, they started seeing really weird mistakes on drawings. For example, the center of the circle is not in the center of the circle. And then with every one of these goofed up drawings I had, they had all been done by a kid who had done the computer class, but had never drawn by hand and had never built anything. You have to touch to perceive. Okay. We need to keep these creative classes like cooking, sewing, music, woodworking, theater, welding. We got a huge shortage of skilled trades. I've worked with a lot of guys. They were the naughty boys, labeled oppositional defiant. They need a shop teacher to turn them around. That's what they need. And then you take classes like theater. I get to go to a lot of fancy theaters, and I get to like look at all the scenery and stuff they got backstage. Theater is something that artificial intelligence is not going to replace. These are good careers. Why are you taking this stuff out? This is stuff where you're still going to have a job when AI starts taking things over. Okay. I was a lousy student. Things went well in elementary school. I got kicked out of ninth grade for fighting. I was just a handful of trouble. Went off to a special school, spent a lot of time learning how to run their horse barn. But one of the things I learned running that horse barn is I learned how to work. And I'm seeing too many kids with a label not learning how to work. Then I go back to my industry, the cattle industry. And I know a guy who stutters, dyslexic, ADHD, probably autistic, rotten student, took welding, makes some stuff, sells it at some trade shows, and he owns a metal fabrication company. This is what makes me nuts as I go back and forth between the silos. We got kids growing up today that don't know how to use tools. Yeah, you know what's happening right now? There's a lot of specialized stuff we don't know how to build. The Italians know how to build it. Canada knows how to build it because they still have trades classes. Yes, when the things get really messed up and you're living in that fancy-dancy apartment building, there's some big pumps that better work or you're not going to have any water. It's just that simple. Okay, now one of the things that got me turned around in high school was my science teacher. He came on the scene kind of late in high school, and now studying was a way to get to a goal of becoming a scientist. Some of these kids don't want to study. It needs to be a pathway to a goal. Another problem I'm seeing is a kid that's labeled autistic or some other label, and they're doing great academically, and then they just crash in the workplace because they haven't learned work skills. And I can't, there are too many kids getting babied. They aren't learning laundry, shopping, all kinds of things like that. And we sometimes get way too much medical model. And I think the DMS-5 has been a disaster because, all right, William. The reason why I think making autism one big spectrum is a disaster is I'm seeing a smart kid who ought to grow up and work for Boeing ending up in the basement playing video games, getting stuck in a class with kids that can't dress themselves. Another thing I'm going to be talking about is I think specifics. I don't think in generalities. Way too much top-down thinking. We talk about an inclusive classroom. I'm going to think about that with specific examples. Like in my little elementary school, there was a girl named Claudia, and Claudia had a heart defect, so she couldn't do very much exercising. So we let her be goalie. We let her take care of the balls in the gym, always giving her something to do. Okay, that's an example of an inclusive classroom that worked. You see, I like to look at specific examples. Okay, for me, then studying became a path to a goal. Okay, wait a minute. We gotta get that. All right, granddaddies. Oh, I'm sure there's lots of granddaddies over there at Boeing that discover that they're on the spectrum when their grandkids get diagnosed. I'm serious. You know, engineering, after all, you gotta have autistic genes or you can't design airplanes. It's just that simple. And especially since they changed the diagnostic guidelines in 2013, I'm seeing this more and more, where the granddads are coming up and they're finding out that they're probably on the spectrum. Now, where that diagnosis helps those granddads is on relationships. But I'm seeing too many kids that's on the smart end of the spectrum where on the job front it's hurting them. Instead of getting a job at Boeing, they haven't learned how to do laundry, and they haven't learned how to shop, and they haven't learned bank account and some of the other, you know, basic skills, and they haven't learned how to work. And most of these granddads had good careers. I'm also finding sad stuff where I found a Boeing engineer who would play video games with his son all weekend, and the son never learned one little tiny droplet of engineering. Come on now, this is ridiculous. Daddy has to work for 8 hours a day. Boeing doesn't let them play video games all day. You've got work to do. Okay, let's look at brain variability. You know, people with autism have more relatives in technical degrees. Yes, like engineering. Now look at some of my webpage results and you've got clusters around Redmond, Washington and all kinds of places like that. And then bipolar, you've got more people in creative degrees, in creative careers. You see, a brain can be more thinking or a brain can be more social emotional. Some of this is normal variation. Well, just as I was getting on the plane to go to the meeting I just did last night, I got genetic results back from the Linogen Corporation. They got to do the fancy total genetic analysis. I got it done for free. It's not commercially available. Don't even think about it. And what I found out on it is I found out why I got ugly little small teeth. I've got soft nails I can't grow. All the hair fell off. I got all these skin rashes. Yep, we found all the things that caused that. Yeah. But the absolute thing that makes you autistic, no. You see, the problem is it's embedded totally. You see, you totally get rid of the genetics that makes bipolar or makes autism, you're going to get rid of normal variation. Who's going to build the next airplanes? Who's going to write the next great literature and other things? Also, in the animal world, there's a really fascinating paper that came out called Solitary Mammals as a Model for Autism. Okay, now you take in animals like lions, they are more social than leopards and panthers. Are leopards and panthers defective? No, they're not. See, then there's a point where you get into a big speech delay, and when I was 3 years old, I was a total mess. Yes, that definitely is an abnormality. Now, just a couple of little things on working with these kids. Give the kid time to respond when you're teaching them to talk. Slow down when you talk to them. Also, do not load working memory. Any task that involves a sequence, give them a pilot's checklist. Little checklist, step 1, step 2, step 3. I still have to have that. Okay, what would happen to some great innovators today? Many of them had an unconventional educational path. I'm trying to bust you out of your silo. I've made a point. The speaking agent called me up today, and I'm going to get a chance to do a talk for a big engineering heavy equipment company. Oh, man, I'm going to jump on that one. And I got to go to all the NASA places, and that was beyond cool because I like going back and forth between the silos. Here's a bureaucratic nonsense. I recycle paper. Listen to this nonsense. Burden estimate statement. This is the thing from the government. The estimated average burden associated with the collection of this information. I'm going, who makes this rot up? That's why I'm recycling this piece of paper right here. Okay, what would happen to Jane Goodall today? She had a 2-year secretarial degree when she did her famous work. That's all her family could afford. Where would she go today? And then, how about Thomas Edison? He was labeled a hyperactive adult high school dropout. Oh, I read a biography on him. He named every street. He memorized all the street names. He probably had autism. He was really super weird. What would happen to him today? Well, he learned how to use tools. I went to the coolest kindergarten, Northwest University, Missouri State University in Maryville, Missouri. 3- and 5-year-olds are using tools. They get to make robots by taking telephone receivers and glue them to an old Dell computer lid. Then the little kids go, can we put it on the charger? Will it walk? I don't think so. But that's the reason why in Italy, the Italians are building a lot of food processing equipment in this country. We don't know how to build it. You see, that nursery school is based on an Italian model. Yes, I don't like it when I go in a food processing plant and a lot of the equipment's not ours because it simply doesn't exist. Because who invents some of the very clever food processing equipment? It's the weird geek in the shop. I've been in the industry for 40 years. Okay, how about Steven Spielberg? Bullied in school, dyslexic, rejected from a top film school. And the thing that saved him was his little Super 8 movie camera. So this brings up another important thing. Students get interested in stuff they get exposed to. I got interested in the cattle industry because I was exposed to it when I was a teenager. We're finding a lot of our students, they come in and they have no background in beef and they're finding out they like the beef industry very much once they try it on. So this brings up another important thing. Whatever field you're in college, do internships. Try on jobs. I can't emphasize that enough. Well, this is a really, really interesting book. There's also a super interesting Rolling Stone interview. I'll let you read that he had a lot of bullying in high school. He was different in a nerdy sort of way, doing some really important things. And there's his spaceship docking with the space station. And then, of course, I got to go to Mission Control down in Houston. Got to do all the geek things. And you know, that's the Mission Control for the space station. Why is there nobody in there? Well, nobody there. I'll tell you why nobody's there. Because as the space station goes round and round and round, you know, there's the blackout zone as it goes round and round and round, just like the no-cell zone on the highway. Potty break. They got 6 minutes, then they got to be back. And there's a space station mock-up. I made sure I made it, you know, it was all taken apart in pieces, but I photographed it so it looked like it was together. Okay, what are some of the common denominators of these unique minds? They're probably a little bit on the autism spectrum. Growing up with lots of books, early exposure to career interests, they learned how to work at an early age. This is a big problem. Academic skills and work are not the same. Too many kids are graduating from college with honors, and then they don't make it in the workplace. We need to be making that transition to work. The kids in the pipeline now starting in middle school with things like volunteer jobs, walking dogs for the neighbors, going into internships when they're in college. That's what we need to be doing. Okay, we need arts too. Let's look at Nobel Prize winners in science. They were 50% more likely to have an arts and craft hobby. Some places are taking out the wrong courses. It varies a lot by state. Some states are keeping the classes, others are not. I was just in Lewiston in Idaho. Man, they got a great theater department. Just wonderful. Their school's really supporting that. Those are jobs that are not going to go away. People are still going to want to go to live theater. Okay, bullied in school, little Stevie right here. And I'm probably on the spectrum. Learned calligraphy. Einstein had his violin. No speech and delayed three. He probably was on the spectrum. Well, what happened to him today? This is the thing that really makes you think. I don't think we're really going to find the genetics. Just as I was walking out the door to go to the airport, I got the genetics report back. I got to read that when I get back. They went over on the phone. And the thing is, they couldn't really pin down the autism genetics. They could pin down why I have these ugly, awful little teeth. They could pin that down and why I lost all the hair on my body. But you see, that was a specific mutation. And I always thought that part of my body was like, I was built by a really shoddy building contractor that builds these really shoddy, awful little houses. And I lived in Arizona, there was this one developer, he built these worthless houses that fell apart. Well, that's sort of the way my skin and nails are. They're like a worthless development house. Okay, I'm seeing too many kids today labeled autism, dyslexic, ADHD, Asperger's. I'm worried about them getting screened out. I know they have to have labels in order to get services, but too many kids, especially on the fully verbal end of the spectrum, are becoming their label. Autism's an important part of who I am, but it's secondary to college professor, building things. I'm going to be showing some of the stuff that I've built and designed, and that comes first. The career comes first. The autism is secondary. And the other problem now that they changed the diagnostic guidelines is you've got Boeing engineer at one end and you've got someone who can't dress themselves at the other end, labeled the same thing. That doesn't make any sense. Because without autism genetics, there wouldn't be any Boeing. It's just that simple. And yes, I'm sure if I went over there and I went in their shop and I walked through their offices, I'm going to find lots and lots of people on the spectrum. I've done talks for our honors students, our honors freshmen. They're coming up to the book table, and I go, ooh, well, that one's either computer science or engineering. I can spot them coming. And about 80% of our honors students coming in are computer science or engineering. Really interesting. Okay, dyslexics, you can be really good at business, like starting up JetBlue. They actually give you leg room in the back of the plane. And IKEA, ADHD and dyslexia. And here's Gary Cohen. He was a really awful dyslexic student. Well, he has a quote that I think is really good. Knowing where you want to end up is easier than figuring out where to start. This is a guy who talked himself into a high-level job by sharing a cab with a Wall Street guy going to the airport. And he didn't even want to go to the airport. He just picked out a guy that looked really important and said, can I share a cab to the airport? And he had to take a cab back from the airport. But he talked himself into a job he did not know how to do. Interesting. Okay, now I'm going to show you what to do with a political science degree. I want you to meet Tina. Tina is the project manager who just finished up our gorgeous new chemistry building. She had a political science degree. So you know what you do? Can't get a job. So you get a job with Hasseldan Construction Company answering phones. I'm not kidding. And then, well, think of how much she learned about the business doing that. She's answering their main office phone. She's talking to the vendors, she's talking to the customers, she's talking to the architects. Then she started working on the finances and the bidding. Next thing you know, she's out in the field. Next thing you know, she's running a job. And there's lots of politics going on at the job. You gotta like deal with the little squabbles, like two workers on one of those little lift things yelling at each other saying, well, you don't do any work. And she's got to go out there and deal with that. So you never know where you can get into good careers. This is a really, really good career. Okay, a lot of really creative people didn't do conventional paths. Okay, now what did I do wrong here? Boy, pressed the wrong thing here. Okay, Okay, I've got to point this down at the computer that's in the box down here. Okay, this is one of my most important slides. This is the different kinds of minds, and I talk about this in my book, The Autistic Brain. I am a photorealistic visual thinker. Everything I think about is a picture. So I don't think in generalities like inclusive education. I think in specific examples, like Claudia, student in school. Okay, somebody in a wheelchair. Okay, as long as the building's accessible, that should be no issue in the classroom. I'm thinking about Delta Airlines. They've got a good program. Blind people go to the call center for reservations. And the thing that's interesting there is the person who's in charge of that, their job is actually keep Delta out of trouble with the FAA. That brings a little different way of looking at things. More of a sort of can-do attitude. And they're probably doing a better job of employing blind people than a lot of other people are doing. Okay, but you see, I'm looking at specifics. Then you have the mathematician, that's your engineer. They think in patterns. They calculate everything. Music and math minds. Now, the photorealistic visual thinkers like me can't do algebra. Then you have the verbal facts guy, he loves history. Then you got the auditory thinkers who are really good at sales and stuff like that. Now, the thing is, you need us visual thinkers. Like Steve Jobs was an artist. That's what made the iPhone easy to use. Engineers had to make it work. Now that he's gone, they're ruining the iPhone. My iPhone's losing messages. I'm finding out other people's iPhones are losing messages. I don't know what's going on here. The engineers are messing it up. But you're going to need us visual thinkers. Well, let's give an example. I've been thinking about self-driving trucks. Yeah, you're going to take this super expensive rig, maybe with a load of iPhones in it, and you're going to send it across the country unmanned? How are you going to keep it from getting stolen? Well, look at that backdrop back over there. You know what I'll do to hijack that truck? I'm going to put a big policeman picture on that backdrop, put it out in the highway. That truck's going to pull off the highway. Get a GPS jammer, and I can rip off a bunch of iPhones. But maybe I'm going to be really disappointed because maybe it was the cat litter load. I don't really want that load. Now, I don't understand a lot of the computer stuff, but I understand where the sensors on that truck have to deal with the real world. Like the lines aren't painted well on the highway. I bet you the trucking companies will be out there painting the lines all the time on the highway to make sure they're perfect. But you're going to take something that expensive and send it all the way across the country without somebody to guard it. Okay, we thought e-books are going to take everything over. They haven't. Because a book you really want, you want in paper. And by the way, we are selling books afterwards out there. And we're selling paper ones that for me to sign, and but I do sign Kindles and tablets too. Okay. There's values in the humanities. They teach a different way of thinking. One of my favorite classes when I was in college was English literature. We read pieces of text from the original writing, not somebody's rehash of it, and the professors would explain what they were trying to communicate. This is what Thomas Edison had to say about mathematics, because he couldn't do it. I'm not a mathematician. I can always hire some mathematicians. They can't hire me. But you're going to need us visual thinkers to work on safety systems. Okay, and you might think if I'm telling you a bunch of rubbish about the visual thinkers and the math thinkers, this book right here, The Autistic Brain, has got all the science in it. I'm worried our educational system is screening out a lot of the visual thinkers. Let's look at another situation where you need visual thinkers, safety systems. Fukushima was a colossal visual thinking mistake. It's not a very good idea when you live next to the sea to put this super important emergency cooling pump in a non-waterproof basement. Simple watertight doors and a sump pump would have prevented this accident. And what I've learned is the engineer doesn't see it. We need visual thinkers in science. There's been a lot of problems in biomedical research on replicating experiments. And it has to do with the methods, like how you stir up your cancer cells affects the results. You see, that's the visual thinking part. It's important. There's different ways you can teach math. don't get hung up on too much top-down theory rubbish. You know, inclusive. Let's figure out specific situations where it works, and we work on it one success at a time, and write about it. Okay, I understand some schools not accessible to wheelchairs. Well, then maybe we move certain classes down to the first floor of the building. All the new buildings should be accessible. But I think it's going to be a whole lot better to not think about this in the abstract. Okay, let's say you want to start a program like this in a school. Let's start with the easy kids. Because you want to make sure when you first introduce it, you're going to have successes. Okay, interesting things you can have kids do. And now what's happening? This doesn't seem to want to work. Okay, now it was really trippy when I asked a physicist about, think about a church steeple. Instead of seeing a whole lot of specific pictures like me, he sees pictures of people swaying and music and stuff like that. Completely different. Now there's the, now I seem to be having trouble with, always seem to have trouble with slide changers. There's the iPhone, we already discussed that. Let's avoid overly narrow college majors. I'll tell you what SpaceX wants. They want engineering, computer science mixed up together with a dash of physics in it. Don't get too specialized. And if you want to do the really far out stuff, you put biology in it. Oh, let me tell you, that's gonna be Brave New World. And I combine the philosophy and history stuff with business classes. I gotta make you more employable. I did animal behavior, industrial design, neuroscience, and psychology. I was originally a psych major, but the things I learned about optical illusions helped me with my cattle stuff because I looked at what were the animals seeing, and people thought that was stupid. And I noticed that cattle would balk at shadows. They'd balk at pieces of chain hanging down, stuff that people don't notice. Don't get over-specialized. I like what Isaac Asimov has to say about getting over-specialized. A degree is the first step down a ruinous highway. You don't want to waste it, so you go into doctoral research, and you end up a thoroughgoing ignoramus on everything in the world except for one subdivisional sliver of nothing. All right, let's look at artificial intelligence. This is the ultimate autistic brain. It is a bottom-up thinker the same way I think. The way I think is you take specific examples and you start to put them in categories. When I was a little kid, I sorted cats, dogs, and horses by size. Okay, then as I learned more, okay, dachshunds are dogs, but they're the same size as cats. So then I had to find other features dachshunds share with dogs, like barking and their smell. It's bottom-up thinking, thinking in specific examples. And it's really, really good at specialized skills. But what worries me is hackers training it wrong. An AI program's only as good as its training. And you can get hackers in there training it to do the wrong things. You better have a mechanical off switch. Remember in Space Odyssey how they had to turn HAL off and it was done mechanically? Oh, now what's going on here? What is going on with this? Okay, I'm having a lot of problems with slide changers here. Thing is AI is the ultimate bottom-up thinking. That's what it is. And here's a guy that they're taking cancer patient data and they're going to form the hypothesis from the data. It's not top-down. See, verbal thinking is very, very top-down. And watch out when we get into material science. It's going to be beyond trippy. Now, understanding animal behavior, I paid attention to visual details. How many people know what that is right there? Ooh, you must have had the eclipse here. Those are eclipse shadows. And I didn't know that eclipses made these weird shadows. This is on the sidewalk in front of our library on campus. I watched students walk over this. They didn't notice it. I noticed it. And I was sort of appalled at how oblivious a lot of the students were to the eclipse. Only about 20% were interested. Things like chains hanging down and shoot scare cattle, little pieces of yellow tape. We need non-slip flooring for cattle. All right, how many people noticed that that animal is looking at the sunbeam? Now, we're doing better than the mathematicians would do on this. But you see, that's observation. Visual thinking is about observation. Animal memories are specific because they're sensory-based and not word-based. Like, I knew a horse that was afraid of black cowboy hats but not white cowboy hats. It's sensory-based. Some autistic kids are sensory-based. Top-down verbal thinkers overgeneralize. We have a lot of problems with that in education. And a lot of gobbledygook. Let's read some more gobbledygook on this thing here. The estimated average burden associated with the collection of this information is 15 minutes per responder or record keeper, depending on the individual circumstances. That's good gobbledygook. That's the thing I have to fill out for a talk I'm doing for a government agency. And let's do some medical model gobbledygook for a Boeing aircraft. That's really stupid. But it's absolutely accurate. Okay, I was at the Atlanta airport, and my plane had a mechanical. So I run over to these other windows where I could see them, everything going on. All the doctors from the, you know, the Delta Airlines hangar over there checking this patient out at the gate. Well, they finally figured out that it had a microbleed in the anterior proximal rotary appendage. All right, what's wrong with your airplane? This is proper medical gobbledygook for a little hydraulic leak in the mechanism that pulls the landing gear up and down. Okay, anterior proximal, because it's up inside the plane. This is distal rotary appendage. This is proximal. It's the front wheel. Yeah? Good gobbledygook, isn't it? You know, geek, nerd, and mild autism are the same thing. And you know what I think with the genetics thing? I got to read the whole genetics report when I get home, that the autism genes are so embedded, they're not going to find them like they found out why I have these crappy little teeth that I've got. Yes, that's a very expensive genetic test to figure that out. That was sort of interesting. Okay. Now, when a mind is more cognitive, you like to explore. Why do we do something like Voyager? Because you want to just send the satellite out there and explore. Voyager is now 40 years old. It's leaving our solar system. It still works. Those geeks, they bootlegged enough super really good parts to make sure it keep working. So they get some good pictures of Saturn, and here's the guy. His whole reason for living, 81-year-old Ed Stone, he's still at Mission Control, and they're still going to find out some things about Earth when Voyager leaves the solar system completely. Why are we a Class M planet that has life? You know where Mission Control is now? They lost all the funding. They're kicked out of NASA. It's at a strip mall next to a puppy training center and a McDonald's. Now, the thing is that they have to pull this very weak signal in. So you're going to have some satellite dishes probably as wide as this room. They're in three different parts of the world working together to pull in the signal. You've got geeks seeking knowledge. They figure out how to get the budget to do that. You see, that's pure seeking knowledge. I read about this about 6 months ago in the New York Times Magazine. I cried for the whole flight. People were wondering what was wrong with me. Why was I crying so much on this plane? Because I got so emotional about reading this. Seeking pure knowledge. That's his reason for living. And maybe that's just amazing. And then when I went to the NASA Center in Ames, there was an old abandoned McDonald's there. And what they've got in there are all these ancient kind of data tapes they have for some of the old satellites, and the retirees are coming in and trying to get the data off. And what this brings up is, let's look into retirees. They could work with these kids. We got Boeing engineers that are retired. Let's get them teaching kids some engineering, teaching kids some mechanics. Let's throw the cars out of the garage and use garages what they should be used for. Getting kids off the video games doing stuff. Let's tap into these retirees. Because kids aren't going to get interested in engineering unless they get exposed to it. And I've got a new book coming out this spring called Calling All Minds. It's about inventions. And when I was a little kid, I made a little bird kite with little winglets. You know, and then the Dreamliners go like this. Airbus has got a new plane with curly cues like that. I just saw her the other day at the airport. Looked it up online. Really cool. Why do golf balls have dimples? That was an accidental discovery. Scuffed up rough ones worked better than smooth ones. That's how that was discovered. It's really cool things. Okay, let's start teaching kids how to work. Walking dogs, selling cookies, church jobs, farmers market. Let's figure out what we can do in the neighborhood. You know, some stuff you don't need a lot of funding for. Figure out what you can do in the neighborhood. Okay, my work ethic. When I was 13, mother got me a sewing job with a freelance seamstress, cleaning horse stalls at 15, roofing at 16. That's probably illegal, but man, it's fun. Sign painting, and my sign painting work morphed into corral designing, carpentry work. I did a research internship at a lab when I was in college. Lots of work experience. And I was doing a lot of carpentry work when I was at the high school, and I was painting stupid signs for the carnival. Now we don't even have hand-painted signs anymore. Kind of sad. So how did I get a weird job like that? I showed an old sign painter a portfolio of my work. When you're weird, you sell your work, not yourself. I'd go in an interview and just lay out the portfolio. Just show the work off. There's my sign painting truck. So that brings up the issue of driving. It's going to take longer. Driver's ed chucks them in too fast. I did a whole summer on dirt roads. That was 200 miles on dirt roads where we went near any traffic. It's that simple. Favorite classes? My English literature class. I had one worthless class in college. It was body mechanics, a stupid exercise class. But sometimes you just got to do something stupid. I had a great science teacher. I had Ann out at the ranch. And then there was a contractor named Jim Uhl who seeked me out. He'd seen my drawings. Yeah, you know, ability attracts things. You get to show the drawings off. That's how I sold jobs. What would happen to me today? No speech until age 4. I would get good early intervention, but I'd be a prime candidate for video game addiction. One of the reasons why I'm so down on this is I'm seeing bad results. Yeah, let's do what this little Italian nursery school is doing. We're teaching kids how to use tools really young. Oh, we need to be doing work experience. And don't let your label totally define you. Yeah, Boeing engineer is much cooler than autism, even though there's lots of autism genes over there. I wouldn't have been able to fly on a plane today without autism genes. It's just that simple. Okay, and we need hands-on experiences in the schools because sometimes the experiments don't work. That's the real world. And when they get my book, Calling All Minds, they're going to find they got to work on that bird kite to get it to work because the art paper with the rough surface that I had as a child, yeah, you know, maybe I can buy it on some weird internet site, but you can't just go like in an office supply store and get it. Okay, last year I talked to a lady who ran a riding stable, and she had to teach three or four teenagers how to hook up a garden hose. That's pretty pathetic. Okay, now, I like to explore inner space. Okay, I've done genetic stuff, and I try out all the new brain scanning equipment, and all the stuff that I try out is not commercially available. But you know what? My art ability showed up when I was in third grade. And my art ability was always encouraged. And I got a big visual thinking circuit. Build on strength. You got a kid that's good at math? Build on the math. Have the kid learn programming. Build on it. I've been in the construction industry for 25 years. I'd sell a job, design it, supervise its construction, start it up. Construction's about finishing jobs. And if a smart kid ends up in the basement playing video games, that's not a very good project, that's for sure. There's a big visual thinking circuit. And right there, you can see the trashed out algebra department. I basically have no working memory. I got to write everything down. Like when a speaking agent calls me up, and I'm waiting in line at security, and I'm going, you know, I'm going to have to call you back because I can't write on the calendar right now in the security line. I've got to get out to the gate, and I'll call you back. Okay. One thing about the meat industry, there's no academic barrier of entry. You can read and write, do simple math, you're in. How did I get out of algebra? Because in 66, when I went to college, it wasn't the required class. The required class was finite math, statistics, and probability. And I entered college on probation because I flunked the SATs, totally trashed them. Mother pounded open the back door. See, there are lots of things we got to figure out how we can get into the back door. You show the portfolio to the right person. I'd go show them drawings and stuff of jobs. I grew up in an educated family. I did lots of little projects made with cardboard. Books were an important part of my life. My two favorite books when I was a kid, Inventors and Black Beauty. And early exposure to career interests, really, really important. And when you're weird, you gotta show off your work. So I'd go into a job interview and I'd lay that out on the table. Big 2-foot by 3-foot drawing. Yeah, I was really weird. And they go, and you drew that? Well, yes, I did draw that. So what I had to do, I had to learn how to read blueprints first. And the way I learned how to read blueprints was to take this big blueprint of the Swift meatpacking plant, walk around the plant for 2 days till every line on the drawing matched the equipment. And then there was a draftsman named Davy. And I learned the technique of drawing by watching him. This guy was brilliant. You know what he did after he left the feedlot construction company? He worked for a model airplane company, and he made a stealth fighter model that looked just like the top secret real one. Because he was a visual thinker, and he figured out how to shape a plane to evade radar. The military was having kittens over that. You better believe it. That's the guy I learned drafting from. And there is my brochure. Yeah, 4-color printing was really expensive back then. You had to do really nice just black and white printing. And there's the original dip vat, original photo that was on my first brochure. There's another photo there. And there's the one they built for the movie. I love the fact that the movie had my real drawings and real jobs in it. There's another thing that's in the movie that's really important. There's a scene in there where I go up to the editor of the magazine and I get his card. That happened. I had the guts to do that, to go get the card. Lots of times, the door opens and people don't see it. I figured that one out early on. Here are two of my projects starting. And I'm realizing how much construction affects how I think. When you don't have parts, we'd pick that phone up until we got parts. And when I got asked by the McElhaney Cattle Company in 1976 to design this job, I said, give me 3 weeks, because I had absolutely no idea how to do steel reinforcement. The next day, man, I was picking that horn up, and I called a guy I knew in Washington to send me the drawings for the concrete reinforcement. You know, you got to get it done. I was only at the 60% level of knowledge. I went through the door. You know, a lot of girls won't go through the door until they're at the 90%. But guys will go through the door at the 20%, and then, but then you know what they do? They try to wing it. I was scrambling around finding out how to do the rebar reinforcement. They wing it, make a $20 million mistake. How about build a packing plant without enough wastewater treatment, even when you've been told you didn't have enough? And here's one of my center track restrainer systems. This is a major piece of equipment. Don't worry, I won't show you any gucky slaughter pictures. If you want to see how this works, you can look up Beef Plant Video Tour with Temple Grandin. But what I really wanted to do is just show off the steel work here. You know, you got a lot of complicated steel work. And, you know, stupid people don't build complicated steel work like this. And one of the things that's a worry is we can still build a beef plant, but we don't know how to do all the stuff anymore for pork plant. The Italians and other countries know how to do that. That's because we've taken skilled trades out. And you're going to live in one of these fancy towers out here? There's some big pumps you better have. You better have a little respect for skilled trades. It's just that simple. Okay, and you're going to need people to fix and maintain equipment. And there's some more of my drawings. That's the original drawing for the dip vat. I always like to show my drawings off. Here is pictures of jobs. These are the kind of things I'd show clients, because when you're totally, absolutely beyond weird, you got to show your work off. So there's another picture of a job right there, and another picture of a job. You show off the work. And half the cattle in this country are handled in equipment I designed in these large meatpacking plants. I think that's doing pretty good for somebody they thought was retarded.
Thanks for streaming this extra episode of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9, Seattle. Dr. Temple Grandin gave this talk, Different Kinds of Minds, as part of the University of Washington Graduate School Lecture Series, Equity and Difference, Rights. You can hear the full event on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Maybe subscribe to our podcast when you're there. We have a wealth of talks to follow. Tune in again soon.